Hi, this is Carrie, and welcome to Tandem Talks, a podcast meant to empower you to live your life your way.
And I'm Craig. Join us as we go deeper with entrepreneurs and their journey creating success in business and life. Hello, listeners. This is Craig and Carrie coming back at you with another episode of Tandem Talks. We are very energized, excited, and fortunate to be with none other than Pete Moore. He has a full suite of entrepreneurial endeavors that I want to talk about just a little bit. But for a quick intro, Pete did his degrees in business and he has his MBA from the University of Ottawa, I believe, correct? And he is the president and owner of Shoetopia, which is retail shoe stores. Right. And he also is or was a broker for Sunbelt, which is someone that actually helps people buy and sell businesses, I believe, of sorts, which is a very important skill to have. He also is a head of a podcast or runs his podcast, Simplifying Entrepreneurship, which we had the privilege of being on and getting to know Pete a little bit that way. In addition, he is an entrepreneurial coach, a speaker. As we also know, he was just a musician or is a musician and plays a little bluegrass. You see his guitars there in the background. Unlike me, he probably actually knows how to play them well since he performs probably for at least a little bit of money. No one has ever paid me any money to play. They've probably paid me money to stop playing, I think.
Hey, Craig, there's only one way to make $1 million in bluegrass.
Yeah.
And it's to start with two.
Right.
It's not high paying stuff.
Yeah. Well, you do it for the love of the game, I'm sure.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
So you've gotten to see a lot of different businesses, the guts, you do a lot of coaching and you actually run businesses. You have several side hustles, which we can talk about or not, depending on which way the conversation goes. So anything you want to add to your background just a little bit there? I know you also serve on the board of directors and help some nonprofits. So kudos to you for all the things you've done. Maybe just talk a little bit about how you got into the game of side hustling. What was your mindset around entrepreneurship? Were you just born when you were 3 years old? You were just like, I'm going to be a business owner? Or did you have to kind of cultivate that over time? How did you dip your toe in the water and become so entrepreneurial, as we say?
A lot of questions right there, Craig.
So you pick whatever one the heck you want and just riff with it.
So choose your own adventure
podcast. Choose your own question podcast.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll start off by saying that I have a firm belief that entrepreneurs, you know, business owners are the foundations of their communities. And they're the ones that employ people. They're the ones that put foundations together to build the wing on the church. They're the ones to run the clubs that help the community out for Christmas decorations and for putting up, you know, taking care of the public spaces and all of that stuff. Typically, when you look behind it for building the wing on a new hospital, you know, those people are typically the business people. And that's why I'm so pumped, really, about working with entrepreneurs every day and what I do with Simplifying Entrepreneurship, because I really feel that if I can help business owners and leaders in business do a better job in their business, they're going to give back to their communities even more than they already do. And that's going to create an even bigger impact on their communities. And if we can do that, and if I can be my little part to help them do better so that they can give back more, then we'll have better communities. Every community, because in every community, there's business owners and entrepreneurs. And I think that's, to me, the power of entrepreneurship is really building better communities. So that's sort of a starting point. And, you know, yes, I have been an entrepreneur all my life. I've worked for my dad's best friend, who's my namesake. His name was Peter as well. You know, I worked for Pete for 6 months after university. And outside of that, great guy, loved the business and everything, but I realized that, you know, it's not for me. And even during university and starting up, you know, I had lawn cutting businesses. I crafted with my mom and sold crafts when I was like 12 years old to the local craft stores and farmers markets and different things like that. So, you know, I've always been doing that kind of stuff from day one. And now I'm 50. So, you know, 38 years later, let's say, since the days of selling hedgehog teasels to the craft stores, I've done a lot of different things along the way and had many different businesses. I've owned franchises and owned, you know, defranchised things. I've had different service businesses along the way. I've almost always had a couple of businesses going at the same time. So loved when we talked the other day on the Simplifying Entrepreneurship podcast about the idea of side hustling. And I look at frameworks that allow me to continue to side hustle. And that's, you know, having a business. I mean, yes, I have my main businesses that are, you know, the sort of the impetus of what I do. And then we kind of create other things around those. But having those side businesses, I couldn't do those side businesses if I didn't have the processes in place to allow the existing businesses to operate properly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that's the big piece there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think people hear your story, or maybe they hear ours now and how diversified we are.
Yeah.
But there was a point when we weren't diversified, where we were just really had to put our head down and focus and learn how to run a business so we could then learn how to run multiple businesses.
Right.
And then also, to your point, learn how to streamline or systematize some of those things so that the income can, maybe even if it's not fully passive, I call it passive progressive. So it's like pushing towards passive, right? Type incomes. And I think if you're really starting out right now and you have like maybe your day job, don't try to pick up 18 side hustles like Pete, because you don't know how to do it, right? And you'll sort of fail. It's kind of like trying to juggle eight balls when you haven't learned how to do two or three. So you're kind of more at in a deeper into the stage, a more mature stage of your journey. But early on, like, what drove you to be a business owner? What do you think like pulls that out of you? Because you had like the lawn care business, or did crafts with your mom. Do you think like you were just born with that desire, or like you think that was nurtured? Because I think there's this like nature versus nurture thing that sometimes comes in with people where they're like, well, I'm not a business owner. And it's like, yeah, but you've never been around them. You didn't get inculcated in that environment, right? So maybe walk us through your mindset and maybe what you see in other people who have side hustled.
Well, I don't know your framework on this or how you believe this to be, but
that's a good thing. You'll give us an honest answer. Yeah.
Yeah. My belief is that it's nurtured. Yeah. So my belief is that you aren't born with it. It is something that comes along the way. And I think for me, I have a real belief of never ending learning, and I'm always learning stuff. I'm always trying to, you know, capture all these different things. And I think most entrepreneurs have that mindset that they're always looking for maybe better ways to do things or different ways to do things. Or, you know, I think I can craft this and change it around a little bit and make it even a better offering.
Yeah,
when you have that sort of attitude, it's like, maybe that person has the entrepreneurial zing, you know, and those kind of things. It's like, if you are dreaming about stuff all the time on how to think about things, or maybe if you're saying, hey, this, why doesn't this, if you found yourself asking, why don't they do it this way? And that kind of stuff, as opposed to just accepting that that's the way it's done. I think those kind of questions come out to entrepreneurs. It's like, why are they doing it this way? Like, you know, it should be done this way. Well, if you're thinking things should be done this way, on whatever it is that you're interested in business, then maybe you should be looking at how to start that up, because there's probably a lot of other people thinking just like you. And if that's the case, then there may be an opportunity for entrepreneurship. So for me, starting off early, my mom was a teacher. And when she had my sister and I, you know, she gave up teaching, but all through her life as a stay-at-home mom, she was always kind of doing a few things on the side to make a few extra dollars. My dad wasn't an entrepreneur. He didn't actually own the business, but he basically ran a very successful construction business for the owner, who had a couple multiple businesses. So I saw what he did, and he took it as his own type of, like, he felt it was his own business while he was there running it for the 40 years that he was there. And, you know, it was one of those things that I grew up in that. And we have lots of farmers in the family and lots of, you know, entrepreneurial people around us. So from that perspective, I grew up in that environment, and want, you know, I several of my aunts and uncles and cousins and things like that are entrepreneurs too. So from that perspective, I was around entrepreneurism, and that really gave me, because conversations around the supper table, you're having a barbecue, you know, it's like you're there with your friends and your dad's friends, your mom's friends and stuff like that. And they're talking about different things. And it's like, wow, you know, I think I want to own my own business. So from that perspective, I just did. And I started right after university back in 1994. I came out of university, and for me, as a young guy coming out with a business degree, 23 years old, I decided, you know, I better buy a franchise, because that was the only thing that I mean, I had my business background and I've had a couple small little businesses and stuff like that. But I thought I would buy a franchise off the bat to kind of give me some structures and things like that that I could start off with. And from that perspective, I did and ran that business from 94 until I sold it in 2010. We did defranchise it down the road because the franchisor was a disaster, which is something that you could run into with franchising. But you know, it became a successful business and still operates today, back in the Ottawa area, and is still doing well almost 30 years later. So it's an interesting thing. And along the way, I've always been what I call a multipreneur. So I started that, did that for a few years, and then also on the started another business at the same time, which was a cleaning company called Sani Service. And that business, we cleaned and sanitized a lot of restaurants and retail places, 300 places in the Ottawa area. So I kind of had them both. And that's when I started to really understand that I need to have these structures and systems in place that allow me to, you know, have the right people in place, the processes in place, the products in place, so that I could generate the profit. And those are the four P's that I often talk about in sort of my stuff, which is, you know, you need to have those four P's in order to carry forth with some of the other stuff. And then even for people who aren't in business yet, you need to have those structures in place with your main gig before you can then kind of look off and take that trip into a side hustle. That's my belief anyway.
I've got like 36 follow-up comments.
At least. I have 36.
I knew you did too. So I was trying to jump in.
I've been talking, so you go.
Well, I've got the time, so let's have a chat.
I'll zip my mouth.
Well, I think, you know, we have a very similar value in a sense, especially for people who are just getting into the game. I started my first batch of side hustles at 22 years old. And for me, I wasn't thinking like, what can I invent and bring to market and patent and create a need around it. Was how do I leverage more plug and play platforms? And I think if someone is listening and they're thinking, how can I at least get into the game? Yeah. Everything you said with like having guardrails, having the right people, that's the perfect next step in our experience to getting in the game. I mean, there's so many skills that need to be learned. Like you said, it wasn't nature. You didn't come out of the womb with all these applicable skills. You got around the right people. And I love just the visual of you being at like the backyard picnics with your family and like people talking about business related principles and ideas and, you know, where your family's money was going. Like that sends a really loud message. So I think it's powerful. Like very few people have that upbringing. I definitely wasn't at the craft fair with either of my parents, but thinking about we all have access to choose our community at any phase of our life. And so they're not like those people aren't likely going to show up on your door. You're going to have to work hard to get out there and find them. I think social media has evened the playing field in so many ways for people to find those individuals or the coaches like yourself. And then also that ripple effect you talked about early on with like entrepreneurs being such pillars in the community. And I have liberal studies degrees. I studied sociology and women's studies, but the minute I started to really connect the dots on that deeper ripple effect that a positive, empowering entrepreneur can have for the people around them, like that for me, like really sold me on business as a tool to not just create a great life, but like really impact other people in a big way. So I appreciate you talking about all those elements. I think one big question I want to zoom in with you, I see the plethora of books behind you. So I know you are an avid reader. I'm sure you've got a lot of really good book recommendations you can make. But in terms of skill development for someone who's just getting into the game, Like, what do you feel like are some universal skills that need to be acquired no matter what the industry? Like, what are some key, whether it's networking or, you know, communication skills, like what for you do you feel like would be areas of focus generally for someone looking to grow in this, in the space?
Well, I'm going to put in a shameless plug here because I think it's deserved at this spot. And right here behind me, for those of you who are looking at the video, the blue book, it's called Business Made Simple. And it's by Donald Miller. And I am a Business Made Simple certified coach. And I think that is an awesome place to start. It really is. It outlines so many great things that just kind of details a lot of the way to get things going, get your mind thinking, and lay out a few different things. Now, it also comes with 60 videos, daily videos that he talks to that go back to the actual book itself. And then Business Made Simple University is another thing that we have under there, which has a bunch of courses. So it's really easy and simple. And I've been in business for, you know, a long time, as we had talked about.
Years.
Yeah. I love these things. And that's why I became a Business Made Simple coach, because I like them myself. And it's like, I have a MBA, I have different, you know, business training and things like that. And I find real value because it gives you some of these frameworks that we're just talking about. Mm-hmm. And from that perspective, you know, what do I think is most important? Well, I think clarity is most important.
Yep.
So I always start with clarity, because clarity gives you confidence and confidence builds momentum.
Yep.
Right. And because go ahead.
No, I was going to say, give specifics, because I think I know exactly what you mean by clarity, but maybe define that for folks.
So from clarity, the real thing about clarity is, what do you want to help your customer with? What problem are you going to solve? You know, so from that, if you're going to have a side hustle, you need to solve a problem for somebody, or they're not going to actually part with their dollars, if that's what you're trying to do. I mean, there's not-for-profit things and things like that, but whatever it is that you're trying to do, I mean, there's a transaction there. And that transaction happens when you have the clarity of how you can help them. So by solving the problem and providing the solution, then they can move on with what they want to do. And if you can arrange that off the bat and you're very clear about what problem you're solving for your ideal customer, then you're going to be able to move the needle and make things begin to happen. The next step of that is once you're personally clear on what you want out of your business and what you can do for your clients, because I'm a believer that businesses are here to help us give the lives that we want as entrepreneurs. They're not here to frustrate us into working 94 hours a day and all right. This other stuff. They're here to serve us, not the other way around, right?
Yeah.
That's right. And so many people, especially when they get into stuff with side hustles and things like that, they focus so much of their time. They're so committed. They're so like they're in. It's such a frustration that they never even get to actually getting a first check, because they haven't even got that far and they don't know what they need to do. So you should be testing a few of your, once you understand what your problem is and what you're solving for them, then it's time to test it quickly, so that you're not spending a year developing something that nobody actually wants.
Right. Big time.
Right. So the idea is you want to test it as quickly as you can on hopefully a paying audience. And now that paying audience might not be paying what you hope to get someday. It might be at a discounted rate, or it might be even for free in certain cases with people that you know, or whatever the case is. But you need to get some feedback on it so that you can then pursue a little bit more and dig down. But I see so many people, you know, spending so much time on maybe ideas that they feel personally interested in and what have you, but that nobody will pay for. And that's a real killer of confidence.
Yeah.
So, because you need the confidence to keep going.
Well, and all the more reason to maybe leverage a framework like a franchise.
Yeah.
To begin with, because a lot of that data and studies have already been done. And so you're a little more plug and play ish. You might need to confirm your market and, you know, some other things, make sure it's the right franchise. They're charging you off profit, not revenue. I mean, there's a lot of different things to sift through, but yeah, I think that, having that clarity is super important. Let's convert over to mistakes, and you're kind of going there indirectly by answering that question. What are some other mistakes that you see people make, you know, maybe early on or once they get going? Maybe they've got a little revenue coming. Maybe they're doing okay. They're making 500 or 1,000 bucks a month or whatever that is. Then what are the mistakes or pitfalls you see people commonly fall into?
Well, mistakes for me are learnings, and I've made lots of them. Lots and lots and lots.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, what kind of things are they going to get into? Well, basically, you know, I really think it comes, well, this could be a day seminar, I think, the mistakes that we make.
Yeah.
But to start it from, you know, the four P's, if we want to talk about those, product. Your product could be a mistake and may not be the right product.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may not be where you need to go with it. So the product itself needs to be continuously redefined and needs to be continuously sort of honed in on. Mm-hmm. So I think the product is one of the main pieces when you're early on that really has to be, you know, excellent and really come along. So that product could be a service. I mean, it's not just I'm selling a widget. It could be your service, whatever the case is. But what that is, that offering, that product offering. The next thing, and we take into the four P's, would be the process. So if you're doing the process the wrong way, it becomes frustrating, overwhelming. It becomes so much that you just don't want to continue on. So honing down the process, and one of the people that I really like around process is Ari Mizell. And Ari Mizell from Less Doing, he does also probably one of the chief guys, I mean, the most known guys on process and stuff like that. He has a process called OAO, which I really love. And it talks about optimizing your process, automating your process whenever you can automate it, and then outsourcing your process. And that, so OAO, optimizing, automating, and outsourcing. And outsourcing could be internally to somebody you know, like within your team, if you have a team, or it could be outsourcing to, you know, a VA or whatever the case is to help you. But if you outsource something that isn't optimized or isn't like, then you're outsourcing more mistakes.
Good
point. You're outsourcing more failure.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's frustrating. So
just to drill in for an example real quick for folks, like let's say you're going to get a VA and they're going to send messages for you to engage with people for you or possible clients, but your messaging hasn't been optimized and great. Then they go out, you're paying them to do all this work. It can actually hurt your brand and hurt your pocketbook because you're not going to get traction. Right. So just as like a quick example. So you're saying optimize first, which is absolutely beautiful. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And just to be, you know, true, that's Ari's framework, but I still use it in a lot of the stuff because it's just such a great framework. And, you know, if you start automating stuff, the same sort of thing, if you're sending out automated messages, whether you're outsourcing it to a VA or sending out automated ones on your calendar or your email or your MailChimp or any of those different ones that you use, you're sending the wrong message. Oh boy, you know, there's some real problems there. But the big thing is go back, retest, you know, figure it out, try different stuff and keep optimizing. So once something's optimized, it's not always optimized forever because things change. Yeah. Right. And so you have to go back and go through that sort of stuff again. So that's sort of the process piece. I mean, we could talk all day for process. And then the next part is people. So as you begin to hire, you know, you're that first hire is always so hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, who do I hire? You know, but now with outsourcing capabilities and the fact that you can really hire a marketing person part-time and somebody to help you on financing or a bookkeeper or something, you don't need a lot of this in-house. So it's become a lot easier for entrepreneurs to access.
Yeah.
The ease of access to talent is worldwide and abundant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from that perspective, it allows entrepreneurs looking to start up side hustles a lot more opportunity. And for, you know, it's exciting because it's like, hey, you know, I don't need to find somebody two doors down to do my books. I can scan my stuff, or I can, you know, use a bunch of different automation tools to make that happen so that they can do it. Or I can, you know, give them access on Dashlane or on Password Manager or whatever to my social account so they can post for me or whatever the case is. You know, there's so many different ways of injecting an outsourced partner into your business so that you don't have to do it. And I think, you know, there are so many people that have shown huge examples of this, you know, running billion-dollar businesses with a, you know, 10-person team because everything else is outsourced. So there's really, those kind of examples aren't a pipe dream anymore. They're reality. So it's cool.
I think it's so interesting to, you know, you talk about product, process, people. I think one thing that really trips a lot of people up is just being emotionally tied to things the way that they are, right? Even when we think about products, maybe you develop a product and we're just like so emotionally anchored in like it being what we want it to be versus what does the market actually want, right? So how do you emotionally sort of move past that? I mean, I think you have to just be very flexible and in some sense outcome focused, like what's actually creating revenue, but any suggestions you could give people who are just like a little bit rigid in that regard?
Let it go.
Let it go.
Yeah.
Elsa and Anna style, let it go.
It sounds sort of, I guess, you know, basic, but it's true. I think, you know, the idea that the sooner you let go of something that really just isn't working, the better, because it allows you then the freedom of time. And that's one thing that most entrepreneurs don't have is time. There are only 24 hours in a day, and you can't buy more and you can't use less. So there are only 24 hours in a day. You can't buy more and you can't use less. So if you're going to free yourself up from the time that it's going to take you and the time that it has been taking you, and don't look in the past of what happened, look ahead and say, listen, I have to put this to bed now because I'm now going to start on the new product or the new service, whatever the case is, that's going to be more advantageous to clarifying what my goal is of the business and of my life so that I can move my life and my business ahead in the right direction, because this one obviously isn't working. I've tested it. I've tried it. People aren't paying for it, whatever the case is. It's not moving the head. So, you know, just, you know, it's a big thing for a lot of people to just let the past be the past, live in the moment, and then look to the future of what you want out of it. But I think the clarity, we come back to clarity, it's always back to clarity. The clarity of what you want from your life and your business is going to make it easier to let that go, because you're going to see if you're laying it out on a piece of paper, and I love to write stuff down on paper and frameworks that way. If it's not adding up, it makes that decision very simple to let it go.
Yeah. And when you say let it go, I think for me too, it's about learning how to let go of processes or work, right? Because we always think as the owner, like I'm going to do it so much better than everyone else. And it's true. A lot of times, not always, you might do it 100%, but if you can find someone to do it at 80, 60, 70, 40, 45% for some task, it's functional. And like, you can now take that time, as you're saying, and go apply it. One just little hack that I want to add in for folks is, if you don't have a lot of cash to be outsourcing a lot of things early on, one thing you can look at is getting partners, and they can be, and a business partner doesn't have to be a 50-50 partner. You can bring a business partner in for micro equity. I mean, I've done that. Like a tech startup we have, we brought a guy in who sold a $50-100 million company for like 1%. And it's like, just to get him involved. And it's like, it's not, we don't want to give up equity, but like, man, 1 or 2% for someone to be a part of your firm, or maybe 5%. And then now you've got someone else invested in your success versus just like waiting for the check for the hours they're putting in or the specific project. So it's one more way. And I think you've got business partners on different deals, right? And there's just so much value in having a team that you're working with versus you just trying to be this like solo entrepreneur, grinding it out and having all the answers, right?
Yeah, I think there's definitely, I mean, my wife is my business partner. So much like you guys. And from that perspective, there's so many other ways of giving, you know, that sort of equity. And I like, there was a book, I can't remember, we were talking about books, but I think it was called Slicing Pie, or maybe A Slice of Pie. And the idea is that, you know, when you're starting up, you give each person in that startup a slice of the pie. And that slice of the pie might be really big, because I'm going to give the office, and the office space is worth $2,000 a month. So that's my piece of equity, but I'm not going to charge anybody. That's my piece of equity. And then somebody else gives their marketing, and their marketing's $1,000 a month. And then somebody else gives their time, and their time is $5,000 a month. And, you know, so everybody, you add those kind of all at fair value up. And then through time, that guy who gave the most, which is the space at $3,000 a month or whatever at the beginning, you know, the business is growing, and everybody else's equity has surpassed him. So the equity portions change depending on where the business is. And so from that perspective, it's a really neat startup, a business equity type model that I've suggested. I haven't done it myself, but I've suggested to a few people along the way, because people that are bootstrapping it often have other things to give other than actual cash. And those have equal value to the actual entity itself. So you just have to put numbers around what those are, and everybody has to agree.
Yeah. And be a little creative, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of examples, but I do want to shift, because, you know, you have a strong coaching business. I know you've succeeded well there. So as we start to wrap up, maybe just talk to people about how they find a good coach, right? Because there's a lot of coaches out there. And what we've found is, you start talking to them, it's like, okay, what business have you built? And it's like, nothing. I've had some ideas, but like, I just want to be a coach and help people, which is great.
Yeah.
But so what that creates is a lot of noise in the marketplace. So someone's a younger entrepreneur, maybe they've got a company up and running. Like, how do they discern, like, okay, I need a mentor. Yes, check. But where do I go? How do I find a good one? Where do they start? Obviously, there's certain people you help, you can speak to, but then there's people you don't help. Like, how would you advise in general that process?
I think the biggest thing, because there are seasons in your business and your life as an entrepreneur, and those seasons are, you know, you could be in the startup phase, you could be, you know, in the growth stage, or, you know, exiting, as we talked about, being a business broker and helping people buy and sell businesses. I mean, it could be in the exiting stage. So many different stages, and understanding what stage you're in and finding a coach that's around that coaches around that stage, I think is really an important piece of the puzzle, so that you're really in with the right person. And just because you have a coach, doesn't mean you have to have that coach forever. They could just be your coach through the season of need. And that's okay with most coaches. It's like, you know, if you want a mentor, most mentors stay around for a long time. And, you know, I coach people that I've been coaching for quite some time, and that's great. But there's also times where it's like, I just coach people for a 3-month block, or for a 6-month block, or for a year. And then at the end of the year, it's like, are we good? We're good. Great. Because I look at it as kind of a graduation. It's like, you've graduated, you've got what you needed. So, you know, go and love your life as an entrepreneur. So from that perspective, and hopefully along the way, the tools and the frameworks and the systems that we've talked about are going to help you continuously, because that's the goal, right? You know, we don't want to be sort of dependent upon as coaches all the time. We're here. Think of a coach as, you know, we just got off the Olympics. So those coaches that are teaching the Olympians, right? There's a time frame that they're coaching those people, and then they're not, right? But those Olympians got to where they needed to get to. They got to the podium. They got, you know, they made it. And those kind of things, it's like, all right, release and go. And so there's lots of different things around coaching. But the big thing, I think, is you need to have somebody that you feel comfortable with, you feel that you can open up to. Because if you don't have that feeling off the bat, then you shouldn't sign on with whatever program they have. They've got to be in a position where you really feel good about talking to them and opening up, because that's where the breakthroughs happen. The breakthroughs happen when there's good conversation, the stuff's, you know, flowing back and forth. There's this trust, and it's like, hey, listen, if I'm going to tell you something, and I'm a pretty candid person, I'll tell you my thoughts, you know, and I think you don't take offense, and I'm not going to take offense if you don't do them, because you know, that's what the relationship is. It's sort of this relationship of give and take. So ultimately wanting, you know, the client to succeed in whatever it is. So the biggest thing is you have to lay out what it is you want at the beginning of whatever contract you're signing or whatever you're signing up to, depending on the coaching program, is that understanding what you want out of the beginning. And, you know, as you're moving along, taking those pauses to make sure that that's in alignment with everything that you're trying to do. And that if that's in fact happening, then you have a good relationship and things are moving along and you're seeing the progression and you're saying, okay, what do I want 2 years from now? And can you get me there? Or can you help me get there? Because coaches aren't implementers.
Yeah.
The client is the implementer, right? So, and it's our job to try and hold them accountable and help them implement, but ultimately we can't help. We're not doers. That's a consultant. Coaches, you know, consultants will do it for you. Coaches will help you do it.
Yep.
And I think that's sort of a distinct, you know, if you want somebody to post marketing for you, then you should hire a marketing consulting firm, not a marketing coach. Right. So there's a difference. And some people blur those lines sometimes as to what they're expecting of their coach. It's like, well, my coach never did this and never did this. It's like, hey, I'm the coach. You have to do it. Right. So just like the Olympian is not running the race. They're not, you know, doing the dive or taking the shot or whatever the case is. They are there to coach. So that's a definite distinction between coaching and consulting. I think that a lot of people blur sometimes.
I like to say that we help steer the car. We're not the engine.
Yeah.
So show up with your engine ready.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, thanks a lot for being with us today. I think people got a lot of great insights and we appreciate you living a full, enjoyable life and using business as a tool, not to, you know, as a former commercial banker, I say this a lot, but I know a lot of business owners that have built really big multi-million dollar companies, but, you know, they're disenfranchised from their family. They're out of shape. They're not happy. What's the point, right? So thank you for keeping those things important and focused on what matters most ultimately. Where can people find you? I'm asking Carrie's question for once. I finally remembered. So how do they get a hold of you and like how do they connect?
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's great to see you both again and twice in 1 week because I'm proud to have you over on my podcast too at Simplifying Entrepreneurship. But, you know, everything's around Simplifying Entrepreneurship. That's the best way to catch me. You can catch me at simplifyingentrepreneurship.com or you can the shorter version of that is more.coach. So MOHR, which is my last name, more.coach, COACH, or you can email me at pete@more.coach. I'm all over social. So you can catch me on LinkedIn, which I'm active on Instagram or Facebook, wherever sort of the social stuff takes you, but always happy to chat and to further these conversations.
Yeah. Well, we so appreciate you being on, Pete. Obviously we could talk at length about any of these topics. There's just so much alignment. So thanks for enjoyable conversation. And cool. I hope the audience and you all continue to enjoy the grind. Everyone have a good rest of the day.
Right on. Make it a great day.
Thanks for listening to today's episode.
Please subscribe and leave a review and be sure to visit tandemconsulting.co/talks.